You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
On this week's episode of Unwritten.
Oh, and he's plunked, and Haselman's charging the mound. What in the world is that all about? Oh, an ugly brawl.
Some shoving, and a fight breaks out between Belcher and Park. And Park kicks Belcher.
Sheffield glaring out at Carmona.
And now he wants a piece of it. Here we go. It is on.
My track record speaks for itself. So what I did, I got on my tennis shoes. I went to the club afterwards looking for them where they was hanging out.
So sometimes on the field, tempers boil over, benches clear, and grudges get settled with an old-fashioned brawl. It could be a batter who's been plunked too many times charging the mound, or a runner going in studs up at second base. But whatever incites a fight, there are actually still rules even in the chaos of a melee, and we're talking about them this week. My name is Ron Darling, and with me is Jimmy Rollins, and this is Unwritten. Each week, we'll break down one of baseball's unwritten rules. We'll define the rule as we understand it today, explore its origin and context in baseball history, and then decide if it still has a place in MLB's future. Today's episode is all about brawls. Gary Sheffield is going to join us in a bit, and he has a story about a brawl that spilled over from the field all the way to a club and a bar years later. Jimmy, you guys also have a great story about being in the middle of a brawl together.
Mm-hmm.
But let's start here, Jimmy. What was the most memorable fight you were ever involved in on the baseball field?
Oof. Probably us, the Phillies, and the San Francisco Giants. I mean, that was a good one. We had, you know, catchers in at the bottom, people getting in shots. I was accused of pushing somebody off the mound. I have no remember. And it's funny that you could be in the middle, and as you're just trying to pull people off, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, that not that you don't know what you're doing. You don't always know who you're grabbing. It's just a uniform, and it's pulling. You don't realize always where you are on the field. So that was probably it. I just know Schneider and Whiteside, man, they were going at it at the bottom, and it was a lot of fun.
And from the left comes Polanco, and Eli puts a tackle on him, and then the scrum starts.
The brawls, I mean, there are too many with the 80s teams because when you're a good club and so demonstrative like those teams were in those days, people just always wanted to take a shot, and we just weren't going to take it. It was very funny. Like, a lot of teams will take it once or they'll take it twice, and then maybe they'll go out there. But we got to a point where if you hit straw, we're going. If you hit anybody, we were just going. It became almost kind of fun for us in a really sick way, if you understand. The best one that I ever got involved in, because it was the most original. So Rick Rodin is pitching for the Pirates, and our first base coach was Bill Robinson, our hitting instructor. Never wanted to be called hitting coach. He said, I'm not a coach. I'm an instructor. Mm. So we called him the hitting instructor. He was the most elegant man I've ever been around. He's just that kind of guy. And Rick Rodin used to occasionally, I'm going to say this, and I don't even know if it's a fact, but he was always accused of cutting the ball a little bit, making it move. And Bill Robinson had been his teammate. So he maybe knew some inside information. So Bill accused him, as Rick had gotten a third out and was walking to the dugout in Pittsburgh, he had accused him or told him, stop cheating. Rick Rodin took exception to that, and that started the brawl. But what made it unique, the viciousness of it was amazing. Everyone was in, middle of a pile, punches were being thrown, guys were dragged in and out, all that stuff. But what I always found amazing is that in the center of this melee everyone stopped because we all saw that Kevin Mitchell, he had like the San Diego police chokehold on Sammy Khalifa, their shortstop. And Sammy was turning blue. And the entire brawl started because someone said, Kevin, stop it, put him down. And everyone got away. And it was just Kevin and Sammy Khalifa. And Kevin looked up and kind of took the chokehold off him. Khalifa kind of like slumped to the ground and then, you know, kind of revived himself, got up and went to the bench. But that's the only one I've ever been involved in that we had to stop because someone might have died on the field. I mean,
it's funny because as you say that, I'm just imagining, yes, there is a point where it's like, okay, this is too far. This is too much. Like we don't mind getting into a fight. We don't mind taking a punch or delivering a punch. But look, hey guys, this is baseball. This guy might seriously lose his life. That would probably be an end all to many fights. And fortunately, that doesn't happen too often. And you know, not a generation thing, but Ron, you guys were gangsters.
Guys
were pure gangsters. It just seems like just looking at all the videos from the 80s and 90s, it's like when a fight happened, it was a fight. It was a fight. Today, you get a lot more pushing and shoving, and you know, and maybe we should be thanking you guys for showing us, you know, how not to do it and handle it like civilized gentlemen.
That's right. Don't do it like those guys. Hey, you know what I always wondered? Before the brawl comes to hard feelings because someone's been hit or whatever, you're a hitter. You're in the box. You know when someone's trying to hit you. You know when someone's been thrown at you. A lot of folks think out there, boy, you know, he got hit. It was an accident. How come he went out and got him? They don't know that this might have been happening over 2 or 3 years. Every time this guy got 0-2 on you, he buzzed your tower. They don't know the whole history of it.
Yeah, there's usually always a backstory. And sometimes it isn't even with, you know, the team that the guy's on. It's that guy personally. Maybe they have something. And it travels. But I have been hit on purpose. And when it happened, I always knew it always seemed like our side started it first. And I'm the one that was going to wear it. It's like, man. But in instances where a player is hit and you're not the side to instigate it, as that player, you're looking, okay, who do we have on the mound that day? Who do we have in the bullpen? Who's the hardest thrower? And I hope they get into the game. And I hope they look at me because I'm going to give them that look like, hey, we need to handle some business. So it's always organic. And most of the time, 99% of the time, it's a backstory that has led up to that. Maybe a series or two ago, a couple guys got hit, some chirpiness happened, and it never got handled because the game was just out of hand or it didn't allow for it to happen. But it's never a spur of the moment. I can't say never. It's rarely, you know what, I just don't like you today because I don't like you. I don't know anything about you. I'm going to hit you. And it's usually something, you know, a history of two teams. But it's rarely, shall I say, something that just happens at the spur of the moment.
Do you think a brawl can bring a team together? Do you remember an instance where after a connection like that on the field as a team, after the game, you're looking at each other like, I think about you a little differently than I did before this game.
It always does. And I don't think there in the history of any sport, especially baseball, where sometimes you are kind of looking forward to it. Like, man, we are playing bad. We can't get out of our own way. I mean, literally, like, I like you guys, but man, I don't know. Like, it's just like, you know, it's a heart check. I need to see where you are. And I mean, you've had pitchers, or I've heard pitchers like, look, I'm going to hit somebody today, so, you know, be ready. And, you know, and that's that 1% of the time that I'm talking about. You know, 99% of the time, it's usually, you know, something that's happened. But that 1% of the time where you just can't get out of your own way, you just need a fight, like something to get us going, like we're dragging. We're trying and we're frustrated and nothing seems to work. But you know what always does? A fight. Now you're looking at each other like, hey, I got your back. You got my back. I know that now. Now we can go play baseball again. Now we can go out there with something like we're pulling in the same direction again, because you never get into a fight and you swing it on your own teammates when the other team's on the field. You don't do that. You go pull them off and, hey, you get off my guy. And now it's us versus you. That's that fire. That's that ignition. That's that something that you needed to ignite the fire for you guys. And a good brawl does that.
And now look at this. Davis and Ray Knight.
You probably were old enough to remember this fight, but in 85, the Mets fought in Cincinnati. And Eric Davis came sliding in hard to third. I think he went from first to third on a base hit. He came in. He could fly. I mean, you know, you could fly, Jimmy. Eric Davis could fly. I mean, and he was beautiful runner because he was like 6'4", 175 pounds. He looked like a track and field guy, you know?
Yep.
So he gets into third base, and our third baseman, Ray Knight, not only applied a hard tag, but pushed him a little. And that's when Eric kind of pushed Ray. And Ray had been a boxer when he was a kid. So he threw a punch and connected, and the brawl went out of control. Mitchell with Eddie Milner, Hernandez and Carter with someone else. Pete Rose was in the middle of it because he was the manager for the Cincinnati Reds. But the thing that will always be remembered about that game, and something that didn't help the team get along, was that George Foster, one of the highest paid free agents, a teammate, guy I loved, tell you the truth, loved him, didn't get off the bench. And he stayed on the bench.
Boy, they're still going at it.
I think that unwritten rule will always be the same, whether you like it or not. And George was a great guy, sweet guy, didn't believe in brawls. But him not coming out ended with, later in the year, like soon after that, he got released, DFA'd, designated for assignment. We ended up signing Lee Mazzilli, who helped the team down the stretch. But there's fallout when you don't join your team on the field.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're here today on Unwritten with my main man, Uncle Chef, a guy that I look forward to seeing every time we've played, every time we've met, whether it was on a baseball field or him taking my money on the golf course. But we'll talk about that a different time. Chef, thanks for having us today. And today's topic is brawls, baseball fights. They have to happen, you know. So I'm gonna let you take this and tell me your perspective on things. Obviously, sometimes they're going to happen. Sometimes they happen, you know, just by the way of the game, somebody getting hit and somebody being upset. But what is your take on brawls? Necessary? When should they happen? And I guess on the other side, when should they be avoided?
Okay. I think in general, when you're talking about the unwritten rules, Major League Baseball, how the game is played, there's times where, you know, a lot of kids that come in new don't know the rules. You know, when somebody hit a home run, somebody get hit, and they think, oh, a curveball hit me. This guy's trying to hit me. There's times where you know the guy is trying to hit you, and there's times where you don't. And that's just part of playing the game a long enough time to understand that. But there's times where, you know, there's history between guys where you know something is going to happen. That's the time where, you know, that's between you and him. Then there's other times where there's team brawls, where it's camaraderie for team. Certain things happen in a game the average fan wouldn't understand, but we understand as players. Mm-hmm. And so when these things happen, if a guy hit my best player and, you know, a player like yourself, you was a leader with the Phillies, I was a leader wherever I've been, I expect my pitcher to hit that guy because that brings the team together and that gets that guy on the mound a lot of cred with his team. But there's times where you don't go in like a young pup like you. Think you come in there with, you know.
We're going to get to that story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you're young and you're the face of the team, you don't want to get involved with that stuff. Let the big boys handle that. You just stay back. I know you from Oakland and all that, but this is a whole different ball game. So You know, there's times where, you know, you have to let guys handle their own personal brawls. Then there's team camaraderie brawls. And then there's brawls you have to avoid altogether.
And that's so true, because the team camaraderie brawls, I think those are the most necessary. Usually happens when a team is struggling and you can't get out your own way. And there have been times when I know you've been in clubhouses also where it's like, we just need to get into a fight. And it's not that we're going to pick one. You're just looking for any reason to start something. And when that reason comes, just like, here we go, guys. And that brings the whole team together. And it's something, unless you're, you know, you've played on a team in a team sport, you wouldn't understand. It's like, how does a fight bring everybody together? It's because for the first time, maybe in weeks, everybody has one common goal, and that's getting somebody on the other team. We get into a fight, it's us versus them, and that brings you together. There's the times when that happens, and you go on 10, 12-game win streaks after that fight. You could look at that as a moment that brought everybody together. But then there are times where it happens in game. We'll talk about, you know, and was that 04 or so, 3 or 04, somewhere around there. And when we're 03. Playing Atlanta, 03, we're playing Atlanta, and I don't remember exactly how it happened. I was, what, my third year in, and we get into a brawl. And so bench is clear, and you know, I'm a little dude. I'm trying to work my way to the middle. And from behind, all I feel is about an 80-pound weight on my chest. Just hit me. Boom. And I stopped. It was just like, oh, like, nah, well, whoever this is, I'm done. Yeah. Like, it's a wrap. It's, it's like I'm getting body slammed. It's a wrap. And in my ear, he was like, what you doing? And I looked up, and I was like, "Whoo! Oh my goodness! I'm so glad it's you, Chef." Because I knew I was in good hands then. You know, Chef goes back to meet me before I even made to the big leagues. My first game, seeing at a veteran stadium at the time was '97 when you guys won the World Series playing the Phillies, and I was around the batting cage winning Paul Owens Award, and you came over and said something to me. And the funny part is, it was happening so fast, I don't remember that. You reminded me of it. Then I was like, then it started coming back to me. And you just told me, you know, basically don't take too long. And thank God I didn't. But back to the fight, you told me straight up, asked me actually, I guess, do you have your money? And I was like, nope. So you don't have a contract? And I was like, nope. He's like, well, stay out of there. Let them big boys handle it. And that was it. You pushed me to the back and you proceeded to the middle. And ever since then, I'm like, you know what? Those are words from the wise. Like, why was I going in there? And it wasn't like a team camaraderie thing. It was somebody got hit, you know, tempers flare, and that happens. Why am I going in there taking that chance? You know, I'm trying, you know, you try to earn stripes. But if something happens to me today that is career ending, I'm walking away with, you know, the minimum amount of money that I could have made in my career. So I always thank you for that. But that was a good one. I remember to this day, it was just like an 80-pound weight just jumped in my chest. Boom. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's over.
Well, man. I didn't know what your temperature was. So I had to put the claw grip on you so to make sure, because I know you was from Oakland. So,
whatever the temp was, it dropped to that. In that moment, that temp went all the way down for sure.
Yeah. So what I was basically telling you, you're not really going in there to fight. You're going in there to break it up, and you're going in there to grab your teammates because you don't want to grab the other teammate because he's going to turn around and think you're fighting him. Mm-hmm. So you grab your teammates. And so what I was trying to do is stop you from going in there grabbing people, because you get a lot of guys that you know, you don't know how guys feel about you from the other side.
Right.
And so they probably want a piece of you just because you wore, you know, Michael Jordan shoes. Mm-hmm. They might want a piece of you because you're a Ricky Henderson type player. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of reasons. So you don't want guys going in there taking cheap shots on you. And so I just stop you in from going in there and having that melee happen to you. And so I've been in those kind of situations. And I learned from them. Dave Parker's, Don Baylor's, those guys taught me. And so our job is to pass it down to you guys.
Well, I appreciate that, because that saved me. But in your time playing, is there ever, is there a favorite fight moment that you had that you were involved with? You know, I can go back. One of the ones that I really enjoyed that you were involved in. Was the Yankees in Boston when they hit A-Rod. And
Veritek and A-Rod going at it.
You know, you can check the tape. You can check the tape. Yeah. Chef is right in the middle. You see number 11 diving on top of the pile, pulling people apart.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, there's been years and years and years of animosity between the Yankees and Boston. And, you know, and that moment, what goes on, you know, that leads to that between those two organizations? It's different when, you know, you have individuals fight, but this is like one city fighting another city, not just the uniform and the guys in it. It's just like hatred, you know, from bottom up. So if you can run us through the nature of that, you know, your perspective of it, obviously, like I said, check the tape. Chef is right in the middle of it. What happened there?
Well, a lot of that, it's not the players hate the players, really. You just get caught up in the rivalry. You know, Big Poppy, you know, I have no ill will with him. And, you know, you don't have ill will with Manny. You don't have ill will with those guys. Some of those guys have been your teammates. But the problem is that all that venom that the fans shoot out at you over the course of a series, and then when things happen and transpire on a baseball field when you're competitive, all of it comes out all together. It's the fans that have been riding you and talking crazy. And then when the players chime in on it and start thinking, you know, I'm a true Boston Red Sox and, oh, I'm a true Yankee. And so now the testosterone kicks in, and next thing you know, you're at odds with people that you just went out to dinner with in the offseason. So it's one of those things. And so, you know, it's more so the fans get you revved up to go do battle. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, Boston always had they had the leg up on us in pitching. You know, they had Curt Schilling, they had Pedro Martinez. And, you know, those guys, you know, especially Pedro, he was more of a headhunter. And Schilling, he likes to pitch inside.
Right.
And our ace was Mike Mussina. And so that's, you know, and so it's a difference. And so, you know, when A-Rod signed that, he did a trade to kind of give money back, and the union rejected it. He was supposed to go to Boston.
Right.
And so now he's a Yankee. So imagine the venom that's coming from the fans towards him. And so he took on all of that pressure and all of that, what comes with the series. And he felt like he had to lash out because they was throwing him in a lot. And then this time they finally hit him. And and I don't know what was said with him and Veritek, but I knew I had to get there fast. And I because I know A-Rod is not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a fighter, but nobody's ever seen him fight. So he's a big guy.
Yes.
But, you know, and so when I saw Veritek couldn't get him in the air, I said, he's going to have problems with A-Rod right now. And so I tried to get there to save him because we're going to need him, you know, going forward. So I didn't want him to get hurt. And so I knew a lot of people, and I know this for a fact, a lot of people are jealous of A-Rod, they're jealous of Jeter, they're jealous of a superstar player. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want those guys to get hurt through jealousy. So I went in there because I've always been the protector of whatever team I've been on because this is what I do. I mean, I'm a guy that I get along with everybody, but don't cross me in any kind of way, or, you know, you're going to have to deal with me. And so I went in there just to come trying to be an enforcer to take the onuses off of A-Rod and all of those guys. But when you got 25 guys on each team, that's, you know, that's a lot of people in battle. And so you're just trying to go in and pull people out of there as safely as possible. But once you go in, now when somebody see you going in from the opposite team, now they're coming for you, and then that's where it escalates and it never stops. So you just try to put yourself in the best position where you can see the whole fight instead of, you know, having your back to it is not good. You being able to face it is the best way to go about it.
And that's very important because, as we know, and we've seen it happen, and it happens in every fight, cheap shots. Somebody trying to come in, hit you from the back, and, you know, just to say they got a lick on you. I think that's dirty. I mean, if you're going to fight, you know, number one is what you said. You're going in to protect. You want to pull guys off and make sure nobody really gets hurt. We understand it's a fight.
Right.
These dudes got a couple punches in. Okay, it's time to break it up.
It break it up, yes.
Then you got dudes trying to come around, get the cheap shots. Like, man, there's no glory to that. I mean,
there's
no glory. No. Look, you're going to pull somebody up, y'all going to square off. Cool, that's going to last another five to 10 seconds of one-on-one, and everybody jumps back in.
Well, that's why you see, like, different fights break out in different areas.
Right.
Because somebody done cheap shot somebody. Now, when you kind of get this under control, now you're running over here to get that under control. But the guy that was in the previous fight, now he didn't get the lick in. The other guy got the lick in. So now he going to run back to try to find him. And so it just goes on. That's why they call it a melee, you know. So
exactly.
It's just one of those things where it's hard to get under control. And the coaches do the best they can, but they wearing the uniform. So they become one of the victims. So
period.
It's just one of those things where, you know, everything has to come together. And once you see one team on one side and one team on the other side, that's when it all calms down.
And speaking of those individual, you know, break-off fights, this is something I was young. I was a kid, so I don't really remember it. But, you know, I always loved the history of baseball. You, on the other hand, you probably remember this fight. Mm-hmm. 1984, Padres and the Braves.
Yep.
And that was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I mean, there's been some good ones. But that one, you're talking about fans getting involved, which should never happen. So, fans are listening. Look, let the guys on the field handle their business. You can cheer, I mean, do whatever you want, talk all the trash you want. Just don't cross that line, because what I don't think fans really understand is when they cross that line, if they enter the field, now it's both jerseys versus them. No, it's like a family feud. It's like, we can fight. We can go at it. But once you come on and attack one of us, it doesn't matter what side you're on, now it's everybody against you. And you don't want those problems. Trust me, some big guys in there. Yeah. We wear cleats. If you get stepped on, that's part of the process, you know. But that one in 84, that was a good one. It started on one side of the field, ended up in a dugout. You got players going out to Pasquale, you know, who was the pitcher who didn't get involved at all. Didn't get involved. So how does that happen? How are you the guy that, you know, I can't say causes it, but you're the pitcher, you control the ball. How does a fight happen and you're the furthest thing from it?
Well, this is part of what I was talking about when you see the history of a pitcher being a headhunter, but then he want to throw the rock and hide his hand. And so he loses respect with his teammates. He would, especially a guy like me, he's going to lose all respect for me because, you know, if you don't get in, if you've got the balls to hit somebody, have the balls to stand in there and go to war with it, you know, what may happen because – you know, that's why I respect a guy like Darren Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he told Galarraga he was going to hit him. And Galarraga said before the game, if he hit me this time, I'm coming out there, because Dreyfus had a history of hitting him. Because Dreyfus said, every time I throw my two-seamer out and away, it runs back into his bat and he hits it 460 feet. So he said, I'm going to pitch him inside, and if my two-seamer run in, it's going to hit him. So Pasquale, you know, he's a guy that has pinpoint control.
Mm-hmm.
So two different dynamics. You know, he has pinpoint control. He benefits off of getting you out front, making you start late, and then he'll buzz you, because that's what they used to do back in the day. And so this guy he was known for hitting people. And I guess this guy, you know, I think it was Oberfell, and I think it was him that he hit, or somebody before him, and he hit him with the ball, and then he runs towards his dugout, because he's basically saying, I want you guys to handle this, not me. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't be a headhunter and a runner at the same time, you know. So that's why I always respect Dreyfus. You know, he went out there and he drilled him the first at bat. Galarraga came out there, Dreyfus Stewart right there, waited till he got up there, and all you thought was somebody was digging an 8-foot hole in the ground, because when it hit, that's about how deep they went. And, you know, two big guys, man. And so when I went in that melee, we talk about some pretty big guys.
Big guys.
So, you know, the thing is that when that happens, you always got to be on the right side of it, because if you get sucker punched, it's a problem. But that melee went on and on and on and on, because they wasn't going to quit until they got Pasquale.
Period. And that's one thing I've learned. I've been in the middle before. It's not a place for small guys, period.
You get in there. And,
nobody,
you
know,
you,
period.
Hey, for nobody, period. But, I mean, you squaring off in there. And, I remember we got into one with Arizona. Yeah, Matt Williams, Reggie Sanders, Scott Rowland, Rob Person, big B-Hunt. It happened right there at the mound. So after right. third base and first base, shortstop and second, you know, we're the closest to it. So I'm just getting there just kind of, you know, trying to put the arms back. I ain't holding nobody. And I looked right. up, and everybody turned into a giant.
Yeah.
Real yeah. quick.
Real
the dude
quick.
That you thought, the dude that you thought was big yeah. turned to Incredible Hulk real fast. And I was like, yeah. you know what?
Yeah.
It may have been the same year that you pulled me out. I was like, you know what? I don't think this is the right place for me.
No.
Because what was I going to do? I'm not going to pick anybody right. up. They looking at me like no. Ant-Man. So little guys in fights, I'm telling you. Stay in the second row, get your popcorn, you know what I'm saying? Grab a drink yeah. and just make sure nobody gets hurt.
But well, here's the thing, though. This is the difference, though. See, this is where you got to be careful with that as well. The thing is that you grab guys from outside the pile. You don't go in the pile to grab guys. You grab guys on the outside. That's how I got to you, because you was going into. I got you on the outside. So you don't go into that. If you ever watch Derek Jeter, Derek Jeter never goes into a crowd, you know. And so, but like I told them, you know, if a Derek Jeter went in there, because I done seen guys having conversation when brawls was going on. And so then you lose respect for them, because if they don't go in and try to pull guys out to stop this fight, then you just figuring, you know, I'm bigger than this situation, so I get to sit on the outside and let them fight.
Good point.
So there's a difference. There's a fine line, you know, thin line between that, because, you know, you got to go in there to get your guys out of there, because they're going to battle not for them just themselves, but for other teammates as well as you.
All right, Chef. You know, we have to address it. You know, with you being an enforcer, you being a protector, you being the man, there was an incident that happened in Cleveland in 2008. Fausto Carmona and you got into it.
Ouch. Sheffield glaring out at Carmona. And Carmona's giving it right back to him.
And it wasn't the normal, you know, get hit and charge the mound. You know, you get hit. You're the type of person that you don't really say much. You say one or two things and go about your business. Look, we did it, and hey, I'll see you next time around. But this took a little twist, and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, Cleveland, you know, I have a lot of history there. Me, Jim Leland, you know, a lot of guys that was on that World Series team when we beat Cleveland. So anytime we go into Cleveland, you know, people remind us that we beat them in the World Series. And so you have all of these things and venom going on with fans. But at this particular time, you know, when I used to face him, you know, Carmona, he done changed his name two or three times, so I don't know what to call him anymore. But this guy, you know, he threw me a pitch inside, and I wound up hitting him out of the stadium over the third base dugout. It wound up going out of the stadium. I'm just trying to be on time. And he didn't like it too much. So the next pitch, he hit me. So I was like, okay. You know, I see what this is. And then I go to first base. And then, you know, over time, every time I face him, he try to come inside. I'll take him deep. And next time I come up, he hit me. So I let it go a couple of times because, you know, my skipper, Jim Leland, knows me. Mm-hmm. And he knows me very well. And he always talked to me before every game. That's one thing about me and Skip. Skip always tell me, do you have a problem with anybody on the other team? I say, no, I'm good, Skip. Don't get kicked out the game. Okay, no problem, Skip.
That's funny.
And then we go play the game.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the relationship we had. And so this particular game, we're in Detroit. I hit a home run, big home run. He hits me. And after the game, I told the media, if he ever hits me again, I'm going to break his arm.
Period.
Period. Point blank, period. I said, I'm not going to elaborate. I promise you, the next time he hit me, I'm going to go break his arm. And so he hears what I said, and we go back to Cleveland. So Jim Leland calls me in the office, and he said, Gary, whatever happened, don't get kicked out of this game. And I said, all right, Skip, I got you. First at bat, he hits me. So I'm walking to first base. I walked the whole way. Mm-hmm. I took the slowest Sanford and Sons walk you could take. And so I'm furious, but I'm doing this for my skipper. I'm not getting kicked out. I'm 38 years old. I'm not stealing a base. So I get to first base. He throws over to pick me off. Mm. And that's what made me snap. And I said, throw the ball to home plate. You had your chance to get me out. And I like I did with Pedro, I'm going to stare at you. And if you say something, I'm coming. And that's what I did. I stared at him all the way to first base. He didn't say anything. But then when he tried to pick me off, I said what I said. I was waiting on a response. Then I'm coming. He responded. Here I go.
And now he wants a piece of him. Here we go. It is on. Carmona trying to wrestle him to the ground. Now punch is being fired. Both benches have emptied. It's a melee.
I go and I run and get right in his chest. I didn't throw a punch. I just grabbed him right in his chest because I want to get my hands on you. Mm-hmm. And see, all I needed was about 2 more seconds or I would accomplish what I want to accomplish.
What were you looking
because
to accomplish?
Once I got my arms around him, he wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I got him and I locked him in his chest. So his hands was free. So he's throwing punches like he's throwing punches in the back of my head, which that's where I want you. Because now I got a grip of you. Now I'm going to elevate you up in the air and I'm going to land you right on your shoulder. And so as soon as I went to elevate him, I'm wondering why he ain't going in the air. I said, I know I can lift 240. You know what I'm saying? But when I looked back at the tape, it was 3 or 4 people on top of me. Like it was 4, you know, like the infielders converged on me. And they had me and they was keeping him from leaving the ground.
And you didn't even
feel
it.
Every time I tried to get, I didn't feel it. And so what I did was I said, so since I didn't get him in the air, I locked his right arm. So he was punching with his right arm. So I locked his arm. Now he can't do anything. And so now I got all these people shoving and pushing. Now I'm not going to lose grip. And so by the time my team came there, they kind of got us apart. But then when they separated us, I had a split second and I drilled him right in his eye. And I drilled him right in his eye. And then that's when the melee started. And then that's when the catcher, I think his name, Martinez.
Yeah, Victor.
Yeah, Victor Martinez. Yep. And it's so funny. It's so funny because he was doing all the chirping behind the crowd. And that's what infuriated me. And I wouldn't stop then. Now I want him. And so I did everything I could to get to him too.
Now Victor Martinez is trying to get into the fray, but he's being held back, and he's trying to go after somebody, and this thing's still escalating.
Because I did something to Kimona's face. He had some black eye or something. And all of a sudden, I want him now. And so to go to show you that it didn't end with me, because it never does. You know, once that fight was over, Skip came to me and after the game, and Skip said, you did right. You did the right thing. I you know, you good with me. But then after the game, Martinez was popping off about who is Gary, what has he done, and all on and on and on and on and on and on. So my track record speaks for itself. So what I did, I got on my tennis shoes. I went to the club afterwards looking for them where they was hanging out. Mm-hmm. I saw his teammates in the VIP. I walked in the VIP by myself looking for them. So now I'm going to take it to the streets. And so I didn't find him. But it's funny because I was over at Corona's in Orlando and Martinez walking up and I see he got like 4 friends with him and I got a buddy of mine. And I said, there you go right there, because I tell him it never ends with me. I don't care where I see you. And so I'm sitting there smoking my cigar and he walks right up to me. Now I'm sizing him up, right? And I'm finna check out the scene and then we finna make it happen. So, and I don't care. I'm 53 years old, and I should be past fighting, but I don't let stuff go.
So, Time out, dog. He's 53, y'all, and he said he's still not letting this thing go. Okay, no. Press play.
Yeah, so he came up to me with respect, and say, man, I looked up to you. I appreciate you, man. And, you know, what happened, man. Let's shake it off, this and that. When he did that, we exchanged numbers, and I let it go. Because, see, don't get on television with your chest all poked out talking about, you know, who is this guy? Who is Gary? What has he done? And all this and that for the people. And then behind closed doors when nobody ain't at Corona, now all of a sudden it's different. So that's the message why I sent to people while the cameras are rolling.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to see what you made of while these cameras rolling. Because, see, you won't do all this talking. I'm going to see what you made of while these cameras rolling. You ain't going to see me later and try to make up with me when the people think, oh, he got the best of Gary. Oh, he showed Gary. No. Show me when these cameras rolling. And so by him doing that, to me, it's over with now. And it's squash.
So there are times where it doesn't just stay between the lines, where it's personal.
Right.
And it took, yeah. I don't know, what's yeah. that, almost 20 years later?
Yeah.
That you finally put that to rest. He came over, well, he apologized or whatever he said.
It ain't 20 years. It's probably 13, 14.
Well, I mean, well, you've been around this earth. It's about 20 now, you know. But that goes to show there are some times that, yes, things happen on the field and you keep it between the lines. But there, I mean, you brought up a great point. There have been plenty of times guys it's still inside the stadium. Come see me in the hallway. You're talking all this and that on camera.
Look at Jose Mesa and what's the show?
Omar Vizquel. Vizquel. Yeah. I've been part of that too.
That's one of those things that ain't that's a never ending thing.
Never.
If Jose Mesa see that guy in person, on it's site. Gonna be the same thing.
It's on site.
So it's the same thing. Yeah. It's a lot goes into it that fans don't understand.
And it's funny that you brought up Mesa and Vizquel because it goes back to the World Series. That you guys beat a man in 97. And when Mesa was with the Phillies, we were in Cleveland maybe at about 03. And Bo, it was the same type of situation. Bo knew he had a beef with Omar. And Mesa, he took a vow. Whenever I face him, it doesn't matter what the situation is, I'm drilling him.
Right.
And I remember I remember when we brought him in, we bring him in and it was I think we had a good lead, but then it came to a point where he had to come in and get the save. He's facing Omar Vizquel with the bases loaded. And I'm on the mound, and I remember like it was yesterday, Bo gives him the ball, and he looked at him. He's like, please, just get him out.
Right.
Do not hit this man.
Right.
Bases loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Bases loaded. What does he do?
Drills him in the back.
Drill him.
Yeah.
Drills him right in the back. And Omar knew what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sitting there like, this dude is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he don't – this is beyond baseball at this point.
Yeah.
So it goes to show sometimes, you know, it is beyond baseball. It's personal for one reason or another. And that right there, as you said, that is something that it will never go away. This and that on camera, we know that's on site, period.
Well, you got to understand relievers – and closers mentality. Think about it for 1 second. Most, I would say 99.1 of them are crazy.
Right.
Because they have to be.
Straight up.
Because the thing is that, think about it. We play with intensity. We play with a sense of urgency when we're out there.
Mm-hmm.
A reliever is sitting in the bullpen and the closer sitting in the bullpen all day. Adrenaline down, relax. But when he come in the game, what he has to do? He has to match our intensity.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be psycho in a matter of seconds to get out there and do their job. So Jose Mesa been sitting over there the whole game and stewing and saying, when I face this guy, I'm going to do this. So they're going over these things in their head. So when they get in the game, they have to match your intensity.
Man, that's crazy. That's crazy. And last, brawls. Do we keep them? Mm-hmm. We let them happen? Or should that something be eliminated? And this is the unwritten part. Not we're going to, fake. Hey, the protocol. Something should stay a part of the game or try to be eliminated.
Well, I think it's a part of the game because, see, the thing is that when pitchers, they have to pitch inside to keep the guy from leaking out over the plate. And if they can't do that, and sometimes you're going to get hit. Some guys try to do it, some guys don't. But let men handle what they got to handle. And so we police ourselves and we go out here and take care of business. But if you're going to suspend everybody, any and everybody from for, you know, just because you had a brawl, is idiotic to me. You know, what are you supposed to do? You know, you're supposed to just let a guy hit you with a 99 mile an hour fastball and not do anything about it. Well, to keep the pitcher from getting kicked out of the game, because that might be a pitcher I want to see the next, the second and third time around. I don't want him to get kicked out of the game. So, you know, there's a lot of moving elements to it. So it's like he should get kicked out of a game because he had something against that guy. He wanted to drill him. Okay, so if you're man enough to hit me, be man enough to deal with what's coming. And so I think that's what makes the game exciting. That makes it less analytic and less, you know, less appealing. If I don't see brawl, nobody want to go to a hockey game and not see a brawl. So why would I want to go to a baseball game and not see guys get brushed back and not see guys react to it? So it's the same thing.
That's why I love talking to Uncle Chef, as I love to call him, Gary Sheffield, because he's full of knowledge. It goes beyond the plate. It goes beyond what he did in the field. This is a man that has lived. He has an uncle that has, you know, been in the big leagues. They have stories for days. So, Chef, thank you for being our guest. I appreciate you, brother. I love you.
Love you,
and,
too, bro,
I'm
brother.
I'm getting that money back, man. I'm getting that money back. I'm getting that money back.
Hey, well, we're raising the bid because, see, we're beyond $60 now. So.
All right. Hey, I'm with it.
I look forward to it, man.
Thanks for being there, brother.
All right, bro.
So it's funny. So I got the background. He took Curtis Granderson with him because Curtis was a young player and was like, Curtis, where, you know, like, what are the spots?
Oh.
It's funny. I just found this out the other day. Last Tuesday, he was like, he was trying to, like, where are the spots? Because he didn't know where to go, but he knew Curtis knew where to go.
Oh.
So he dragged Curtis around and he said he went about four or five spots. And Curtis was like, man, I don't even want to do this anymore. Like, you know, Curtis a rookie. He didn't have a choice. If you're a rookie and Sheffield say, hey, come with me. You don't have a choice.
Plus, Curtis is a lover. He's not a fighter.
Yes.
Our final verdict. Brawls, good, bad, indifferent. What do you think?
Brawls are great. They are they're fantastic. And you know what? They're fun to watch.
You know, that's funny you say that because I get this all the time and they'll say, well, how do we make the game more interesting? Well, I'll tell you right now, there is not a baseball fan in the world or a hockey fan in the world who doesn't like a brawl every once in a while. No one wants them all the time because then they wouldn't be interesting. But it always belongs in the game because if you have a brawl, it means both teams are really serious and they're playing hard. And isn't that what we're asking of teams anyways, right?
That is. And so, look, it's going to happen. It's hot. I'm trying to beat you. You're trying to beat me. I don't like you. And if you do something that I deem is part of the stepping outside the lines, breaking that cardinal rule, we're going to come see you.
So most of you folks out there listening to us on Unwritten, know this. Most ball players cannot fight. But we still need to have some brawls in. So thanks for listening to Unwritten with Jimmy Rollins and me, Ron Darling. Unwritten is a production of Odyssey and Major League Baseball. Our senior producer is Paul Aspen of Odyssey with Ian Kay of Major League Baseball. Lena Glazer is the executive producer of 2400 Sports at Odyssey. Jody Avergan and Nick Trotta of MLB are executive producers. Special thanks to everyone at Major League Baseball and Odyssey who helped make this show happen. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating or a review in your podcast or player of choice. Or just tell someone about the show. For Jimmy Rollins, I'm Ron Darling. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with more on baseball's Unwritten Rules.